Welcome to Onward, the Foreign Families Forward podcast. In this episode, we're discussing fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. We're going to be talking to Kelly Henderson, the executive director of Foreign Families Forward, and a special guest for this episode, Joe Dom, who has a connection with FASD.
Hi, I'm Joe. I'm a father and a full-time active duty soldier. I am a parent and step-parent of four kids here in Northern Virginia. My one daughter, now age 15, was adopted from Russia at 13 months. She has a diagnosis of fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, as her birth mother drank alcohol throughout the pregnancy.
And Kelly Henderson, we want to bring you in here now because you also have a personal connection to FASD.
So in our case, our son, who is now 17, was diagnosed with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. In his case, he was diagnosed with a condition called a neurodevelopmental disorder associated with prenatal alcohol exposure, or NDPAE, because we had suspicion but not confirmed knowledge that his mother drank in utero. He was adopted from the foster care system, and that's what makes it sometimes very tricky to diagnose these cases if a child does not have the facial features that Joe described, but rather has a set of behavioral and cognitive characteristics that are consistent with alcohol exposure, but we don't have a confirmed situation where the birth mother affirms that she was drinking in utero.
So Kelly, we'll stay with you then. What are fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, or FASDs as they're known?
Sure. Fetal alcohol spectrum disorders are a collection of conditions that are characterized by the effects of exposure to alcohol in utero while the birth mother was pregnant. The effects of prenatal alcohol exposure are wide and often really significant. Children, youth, and adults with FASDs may have physical, mental, emotional, behavioral, and cognitive or learning impacts. The spectrum part of FASD reinforces that it's an umbrella term and covers a number of specific diagnoses. Some of these are fetal alcohol syndrome, or FAS, alcohol-related neurodevelopmental disorder, and more recently, neurobehavioral disorder associated with prenatal alcohol exposure. You hear the term neuro often because the alcohol exposure causes damage to the brain, and as a result, children and adults with FASD are more likely to have intellectual disabilities and learning and behavior impairments.
So, Joe, how did your daughter get diagnosed? Did your family experience hurdles in getting a diagnosis?
Well, my daughter was formally diagnosed by developmental pediatrician in 2017 at age 12, after concerns were raised by her counselors and psychiatric practitioners. Her adoptive mother and I divorced when she was only 5 years old, and we did not see eye to eye on identifying her needs. Therefore, the main hurdle was actually taking her in for a diagnosis. The right questions had not been asked after her adoption and subsequent pediatric consult for many years. Child find also appears to have failed her, or at least in her case. The developmental pediatrician diagnosed her almost immediately after conducting a quick interview and some quick tests, primarily measuring her facial feature comparisons and her head circumference.
So Kelly, what are some of the common challenges faced by adoptive, foster, and kinship families raising kids with FASDs?
Yeah, this is definitely a population that is clearly disproportionately represented amongst foster, adoptive, and kinship families. More than 80% of children with FASDs are raised by non-birth parents. Children with FASD, for example, often struggle with memory, comprehending cause and effect, are slower to understand and respond, and may be more impulsive and aggressive. No two children with FASD are exactly alike. Remember, it is a spectrum disorder. It is difficult to get diagnoses. Particularly in the school system, special education does not recognize the condition itself specifically as a qualifying category. Rather, children with FASD may have to be identified under another category to receive special education and related services. Similarly, many social services and other agencies don't recognize it either. Many medical, mental health, and disability professionals have little knowledge, and the systems don't account for fetal alcohol spectrum disorders particularly well. Because of the impulsivity and the lack of cause and effect, those with FASD are often in trouble. They don't respond well to consequence-based discipline, and they have a hard time with delayed outcomes or delayed gratification. often our kiddos rub up against the rules and end up being labeled as troublemakers. One estimate is that over 60% of children and adults older than 12 who have fetal alcohol syndrome have been charged with a crime.
Well, Joel, can you give us an example of how this neurodevelopment disorder has impacted your daughter? How has and does the condition affect your life at home or at school or in the community overall?
She has emotional control issues, difficulty maintaining focus, confabulation issues, a lack of self-confidence, executive functioning problems, processing issues, learning disabilities, specifically dyslexia and dysgraphia, with her math and reading at the fourth and fifth grade levels while she's in 10th grade, and developmental delays. She struggles with school, especially if the subject doesn't interest her. She has trouble making and keeping friends. She has difficulty reading body language and facial expressions. She's overly interested in dating and sex, yet doesn't seem to grasp the potential consequences of such. She struggles with inappropriateness in conversation with peers and people she is interested in dating, such as talking with about getting married at age 17. She is very sensitive to changes in her eating and hydration status as well, which can significantly affect her mood and behavior.
So Kelly, what should educators and other helping professionals know about working with kids with FASD?
Well, first, as we've mentioned, there is no one profile of a student with FASD. Rather, those impacted by FASD often have clusters of strengths and often clusters of deficits. They may present socially as very outgoing, as Joe mentioned with his daughter, and may have relatively strong verbal skills, but they don't process like other typically developing children. Math, for example, have been found by research to be a relative weakness for children with FASD. They do have limitations in abstract thinking, memory, concepts of time. They have a difficulty generalizing information, and they may struggle with anxiety and frustration. Socially, it's really hard to be friends with kids with FASD. And obviously, these limitations make academic success and success in school and community settings really hard. Students with FASD can often compensate in the early years, but by late elementary and middle school, the challenges begin to surface. Joe mentioned the challenge with confabulation, which is essentially when a child or an adult with FASD retells something that's consistent with their understanding but is not accurate to the rest of us in their world. Many of these kids are labeled troublemakers, and they often fall through the cracks because they do have relative social strengths and can confabulate enough to get by. The brains of children with FASD have been damaged in a way not unlike those that we see of other children who have had traumas after birth. So trauma-sensitive strategies work better than punitive punishments. And even inflexible consequence-based responses are really unsuccessful. It's very important with these children, as it is with any child impacted by trauma, to look behind the behavior they're exhibiting and look at the need that they have. Instructionally, it's very important to keep it short, simple, and concrete when working with these students.
Well, what is the one thing, Joe, that you would like teachers and her peers to know about your daughter in terms of her FASD and the impact that it has on her?
Well, my daughter is a bright, beautiful, kind, caring, and helpful girl that loves animals, likes people, and enjoys being active. She is capable, but she does need some support or accommodations. She does better with hands-on learning. That's probably a key thing for teachers right there. She can, however, as mentioned, mask her abilities for a short time, leading teachers and staff to think that she comprehends more than she actually does. This unfortunately leads to situations in which it becomes not a question of want to do, but actually can't do.
So what are the long-term outcomes for youth and young adults who have FASD? And what are you each doing to support your children in preparing them for adulthood, given the long-lasting impact of FASD on problem-solving or social skills, impulse control, and executive functioning?
Generally, outcomes for youth and young adults with FASD are pretty poor. Though again, for some under the spectrum, this is going to vary depending on the extent of the impact. Often, young adults are much more immature, so their skills and benchmarks that you would expect for a typical child or young adult are well beyond them at the same age. They need much more guidance and structure. They are often vulnerable to bullying and to victimization. They have real trouble with boundaries, understanding them and honoring their own and other people's boundaries. Cause and effect limitations result in really poor decisions that have very poor outcomes in many cases. I mentioned earlier that over 60% of persons with fetal alcohol syndrome over the age of 12 have been charged with a crime. Another statistic is that 55% of persons with alcohol-related neurodevelopmental disorder will be confined to prison, psychiatric institution, and/or drug or alcohol treatment facility in their lifetime. These are very, very concerning statistics, especially for those who are raising children with FASD. There is a huge prevalence of mental health disorders. There are estimates as high as 95% of those with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder have a mental illness that's diagnosable over their lifetime. In terms of things that we do with our son in prepping him for adulthood, young adulthood, and important decisions is really structuring the systems that are designed to support him. We are very, very clear whenever we enter a new situation in a community setting, in a school setting, about his needs. That while he is 17 and looks to be a typically developing kid generally, there are serious limitations and he needs to be treated essentially as they would treat a 5 to 6 year old in terms of supervision and the kind of interaction that they expect of him.
And Joe, what are you doing for your daughter?
My daughter currently has, in school, she has an individual education plan, which helps set parameters and goals and accommodations within her disabilities and that the school can make adjustments for and help assist in her learning process. We are also exploring educational programs to provide her with a skills-based education. We also work to build a framework for decision-making, similar to what Kelly mentioned, but a little more flexible in that we offer her choices, such as, are you going to do your homework before or after dinner? You're going to do your homework, but when are you going to do it? I would love to get her enrolled in some form of personal professional tutoring to address her learning deficits. We have also discussed options for post-secondary education with my daughter. We are looking at support through DARS for driver's education and post-secondary life skills as well. We're trying to find supports that will work within her framework and within her disabilities to actually encourage and allow her to expand and grow.
So, Joe, if you had to start all over, but knowing what you know now, what advice would you give yourself?
Take my daughter to an international adoption specialist immediately. Begin counseling and therapy and consult with a developmental pediatrician as soon as we get home from the adoption. Once she begins school, push for early interventions and child find to identify any disabilities as early as possible. Because studies have all found that the earlier the intervention, the better the progress, and you could actually reverse some of these issues. In my daughter's case, there's also a significant amount of trauma involved. And you mentioned it as well, Kelly. Trauma tends to go along with or hand in hand with a lot of the fetal alcohol spectrum because they tend to be adopted or foster care or redirected. And because of that, a trauma specialist might also be someone to include in your treatment.
And Kelly, for the parents who are just getting started with the situation, what's the best option for them to take advantage of right away?
Yeah, I think Joe made a really good point that while we've talked about some of the real and significant challenges today in raising a child with FASD, there is lots of evidence that early intervention, early engagement with services, array of services, early interventions that focus on all of the domains of challenge with these kids, that we can see some improvement in outcomes. The child is never going to be typically developing in many ways, but we can do lots of accommodating. We can do lots of direct instruction. We can do a lot of remediation that does make a difference. So there is a lot of hope. I want to point out that there are some really great national organizations that focus on fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. We at Formed Families Forward have a whole webpage that's dedicated to resources just about fetal alcohol spectrum disorders and other neurodevelopmental disorders. It's very important to understand those in your community who understand this condition and can help you. Joe mentioned having an international adoption medical expert or other evaluators who know the issues involved with adoption, really key to getting the kinds of services. Because again, as mentioned, sometimes our kids are labeled troublemakers and choosing to engage in behaviors that they may or may not be really in control of. And so it's very, very important to find professionals who understand this spectrum disorder. There are support groups. We have a number of video resources available linked on our website. There is a number of particularly Canadian resources that are very helpful to families. The Canadians have done a really great job of developing a wraparound service system for children and families impacted by this condition. So we look to our neighbors to the north quite frequently to steal and borrow resources. And finally, at Formed Families Forward, we have an online resource directory with a lot of Virginia-specific and Northern Virginia-specific resources, including those that support families dealing with FASD. So reach out, get support, talk with other families living this challenging path, and know that there is hope and help out there.
This has been Onward, the podcast of Formed Families Forward, produced by Formed Families Forward of Northern Virginia and Blazing Kiss Media. Thanks for listening.